What did Sean Paul say to his electrician? Just give me the light.
Oh, God. Well, I mean, you committed to it with a bit of singing.
Which did indeed.
Was, yeah.
And how can you? It's admirable. It's been wait. It's over 100 shows, and we haven't had a mention of Sean Paul yet. So, you know my feelings on the man. I think he's an absolute treasure. So, I hope people listening know who he is.
You know what? I'm starting to think we're almost in a generation now where people won't know people who we know.
Yeah, that is quite sad, isn't it? We sound like we're really growing old now. Oh, you don't know who these people are.
And we're only in our 30s. But anyway, let's get to the important stuff, Nate. So, last week was obviously a 10.
Yep.
So, you can understand that my expectations have gone up a level.
I can't understand that.
Incredible score.
And to be honest with you, I'll be honest, before you give me the score, I thought we were continuing on a very high bar here. But I'm guessing from both your reactions, you weren't that impressed. You were more ashamed and disappointed by the joke.
I feel the reaction was more groan than enjoyment. I don't know, is that fair, Meadows?
Yeah, I think it was a bit like... also because it involved your singing. So.
I thought the singing was a good part of it.
So myself. I was going to give you a bonus for that, because I always like how you bring a little bit more of Nate to the show. And I feel like singing was a little bit more Nate. Anyway, I'll cut to the chase. I'm going to give you a 7.9.
Oh, okay. No, I'll take a 7.9. Okay. I was thinking we were getting back into like 6.5 territory.
Oh, actually. I was worried.
So no. I'll take a 7.9 is pretty good. So that was a 6.9 joke, but a point extra for the singing.
Correct.
Just so we're clear. Okay.
Correct.
Right.
I want you to understand the scoring system.
Yeah, no, so absolutely do now. And I think so. It was, that's what I mean. It was a 6-ish joke. I get that. But bonus points for singing.
Beretta,
interesting.
Do you understand the scoring system?
I mean, that's a good question, Metis. You're not supposed to give away the magic.
if he never has to explain it, I think the problem has been Lawrence has started explaining the scoring system. Whereas before there was some magic to it. Now I know I get a bonus point for singing. My next one, I might just do a full musical number.
Oh, hello.
I know.
To the Paddock, a podcast featuring stories following Formula One around the world. I've gone back to the old titles. Isn't this exciting?
I was like, wow, what a throwback.
As ever.
It's because we don't do them so often now. Your repetition's gone.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. But, I mean, the title remains the same, right? And I'm still joined by you guys, Nate Saunders and Chris Meadows.
Everything is the same.
Chris Meadows. That was the name of my... MLB player on the MLB show,
Meadows.
MLB the show game on the PlayStation. Like you had to get, like the announcer would shout your name out. Obviously the name Medland wasn't pre-programmed into the game, but the name Meadows was. So I'd step up to the plate and it would be like, Chris Meadows.
Yeah, me and Meadows had a spell of playing the game pretty much. Like we'd both be playing at the same time. I could only get Nate Saunders, so it'd be Nate Saunders, which actually really like deeply hurt me because every time I went up and hit a home run, I was like, oh, I'm not getting the credit I deserve here.
The other guy's getting it.
Yeah.
Were you any good at the game?
I was okay.
It's a PlayStation game, isn't it? You don't have to be like actually good at baseball to be good at that.
I used to be good at Tiger Woods on the PlayStation.
Yeah.
And I'm not so good in real life. Look, I got golf in really early doors.
Oh,
Nate bowed his head in sadness.
It was, I feel like games like that, because you play them with the controller normally, are just weird feeling, like good at it or not good at it. Whereas obviously like racing games, you sit, if you can, you have a proper steering wheel, but you don't stand in front of the PlayStation with a baseball bat, do you? Or with a golf club. So.
Well, a racing game is at least like the concept of like when to brake, when to accelerate. Mm. Like racing lines is kind of similar. That's why it's such a like for like sim kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, but the baseball game, you just as soon as you learn like when to time your swing, you could hit pretty much, you know, not hit home runs all the time, but you could get on base.
Yeah,
he gets on base, as they say in Moneyball. I would always get on base. My guy was a beast. Sanders, Nate Sanders, good guy. Rookie of the year. Then he got traded for no reason. Still.
From where to where?
From the Angels to... who was it to? It was to some absolute no-mark team. The A's? Atlanta A's? They're actually pretty
Oakland
good,
A's.
Aren't they? A's.
Is
Oakland
the,
A's.
Either the Oakland A's or the Atlanta Braves.
Braves, sorry. The Braves. I became a Brave.
I mean, you are slagging off Liberty right now because they own the Braves. And they won the World Series like 2 years ago. So.
Well, in the game, they were no-mucks. In real life, they're very good. sorry, Liberty and the state of Atlanta. Sorry, the state of Georgia. And the city of Atlanta.
I think you should just stop talking.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's probably that's a good call just generally, not on this pod.
Well, before we drag it back to actual Formula One, I got drafted by the Cubs on that game. So I was delighted being a Cubs fan. I was like, yes. And then... just a few games into my first season of having made it up to... I don't know if I even made it to the Cubs' first team. I might still have been in, like, you know, AAA or whatever when you're trying to work your way in. And they traded me to the Pirates. And I had to go to Pittsburgh. Lol. But I bring that up because Nate the other day sent me a picture that was about how it was sports grounds with, like, the best backdrop. And, Pirates, like, Pittsburgh was on there. So was Petco in San Diego.
Yeah, I'd love to start doing more baseball games just generally in America because the ballparks are pretty amazing. Like,
yeah, they do look cool. Zach Brown has done nearly all of them.
You interviewed him about that, didn't you?
I haven't done an interview yet actually, but I've spoken to him about it, like, and then we'll at some point kind of do like a, I think, like a spin-off feature, which
how
be,
many how many does he have to do to tick them off?
I think he's got four left to have done all of them, so
I see. Monty in your screen.
Yeah, Monty's just
Monty the dog.
He loves talking about baseball stadiums. What can I say?
He's like,
he's very excited about it.
He looks he's just staring at focused you. On every word you say, man.
He's actually looking beyond me. No, he's going out the room. He was looking out the door wherever Jess was.
So my
segue plan here was, what is the most beautiful setting for a Formula One circuit? Or the most beautiful backdrop, would you say? That Formula One
of the current has? Races.
Yeah.
Singapore.
Ooh.
Yeah, Singapore.
I mean, Vegas is going to have a good shout at it this year, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I still think Monaco, to be honest, if we're talking purely backdrop, I mean, that's pretty difficult to beat, isn't it? Like, you know, just that shot of them coming through the harbour, ditto for Singapore for that same reason. But Monaco, like, you know, even if the race is terrible, like, one of the things that's always got going for it is it's just absolutely bonkers that they can race in that setting.
I might have to agree with Nate here, I think, actually, the more I think about it.
Wow.
I mean, we've got some pretty cool ones. Like, some are just in good scenery, like Austria's stunning scenery.
So you've got two different ends of the spectrum, haven't you? You've got Monaco and Singapore on the, like, oh my God, that's incredible. Then you have Austria and probably Spa for the just, oh, like, you know, through the countryside, just kind of circuit out of nowhere. Depends what you like, really.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go with you, though. I think Monaco. I think
just
partly as well, like you say, because then I think, like, Zandvoort's near the coast, you get some nice beach and stuff, but it's not got that kind of principality rising up the rocks and shimmering Mediterranean Sea and all that. Like.
Shimmering? Wow.
Yeah. When it's sunny. Oh, and is it funny? We're going there next.
That is funny, isn't it? It's almost like this is a Formula One pod and we should talk about Formula One now.
Well, maybe we should talk about the fact that we're doing a pod on a weekend that Nate and I should have been in Imola.
On a Sunday.
On a Sunday, on a rare Sunday off, chaps.
Sadness.
No. Yeah. But neither of us, we were both very lucky with the timing, weren't we, Lawrence? Because I hadn't even left my flat in Reading. My cab was on the way to get me to go to Heathrow when we got the heads up that the race wasn't going ahead, which was about, you know, half an hour before the confirmation. So it kind of was a weird one. I know, like, our friend Luke Smith at The Athletic was there. He landed that morning. Basically spent a few hours there and then basically had to work out how to get home as soon as possible. So it felt a bit weird, but I mean, yeah, obviously a really sad situation, but it just feels like we randomly had a week off. It felt a bit like a COVID kind of cancellation in that sense of just like, oh, we're not actually doing this race now.
I'm glad that they make the decision as early as they could to stop, to stop as many people that would have ended up flying out there. But also, when you see the pictures, it was just impossible to go there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Bigger problems going on. You know, everyone should be helping the people there who have had their lives turned upside down. We wouldn't be having a motor race. So it made sense, right?
It just wouldn't have, the tone of it would have been wrong, wouldn't it? You know, so yeah, it was the right call.
I think logistically, yeah. Like, I think impossible is probably the right word, because I've seen the weather was actually quite good yesterday and today. Like, today's a nice sunny day there, or meant to be, according to my phone, admittedly. But, yeah, like, the knock-on impact. So, there's one of the McLaren fans, Sarah Merritt, who's been posting on, like, social media about their troubles, but the town they were staying in, or the village they were staying in, got basically totally cut off because of landslides and things. And they got helicoptered out of there yesterday, which is Saturday. So, what would have been qualifying day, locally, they needed helicopters to chop of people out of stranded, cut off areas. Like, I don't think it's that they're in danger in that sense. It's just that they couldn't get out. So how are you going to move people? So if
suddenly add 90,000 fans from a drive into a town just up the road, and you've suddenly really complicated it.
Who probably then can't, you know, a bunch of them can't stay where they were planning on staying, and that creates knock-on effects. And you only need, I don't know, 1,000 of those who had to find somewhere new to stay, and it doesn't exist, or they have to stay further away and drive in from even further and stuff. Yeah, it's just, it would have been silly to try and push ahead. So I agree. I think they did the smart thing. Jess had done the same. She'd flown there that morning.
I saw the video that Jess landed posted.
Just 2 hours later, it was cancelled. So,
yeah, crazy.
Long old day. But yeah, I think even people that had that don't seem to be complaining, because they knew it was the right thing to do. And it did give them enough a heads up to get back and, you know, work out contingencies, because obviously, like, TV companies were thinking, what do we do over the weekend when we don't have a race now and things like that. But
yeah,
it's strange, isn't it, because it has made it quiet. Obviously there was that Williams, Albon and James Vowles did the esports race, but and a few drivers doing some stuff on Twitch, but it's just gone quiet really, because we're going racing next week.
But I think it shows you, I mean, I don't know if you guys feel the same, but it kind of, to me, it we've talked about it before, like the calendar being so big and having so many races on. The anticipation level now for Monaco has, for me, has gone right up. I mean, it's already pretty high for that race anyway. But just missing a week, and you're right, like, it's not like there's been, we haven't had loads of media around it. It's just been race done and then silence for a bit. And I remember, you know, and this, you always remember things differently from when you're a kid, right? You kind of remember the best bits. But I remember you used to watch a race, and then it would pretty much, because it was before social media, it would pretty much be radio silence. You might buy a couple issues of Autosport magazine, but there'd really be nothing between one race and the next. And when you got to the next race, there were so many things you wanted to hear from the drivers, or they were just, you know, you're like, oh yeah, I can't wait to watch this again. So yeah, I think from a context of watching the season, especially the season we've got, you know, not a bad thing. Obviously not trivializing what happened over there. But yeah, I think we'll get to Monaco and there'll be, you know, hopefully that kind of that buzz is back straight away.
Yeah, definitely. And to be fair, credit where it's due to Barreto's company and to Ferrari, but they each donated €1 million, didn't they, to like the relief effort. And I think obviously the AlphaTauri have been hands on deck, like Yuki helping clear up Faenza and stuff.
Well, our friend Josh Cruz was out.
He was in the photo, wasn't he, that was going around.
Got no credit.
I know.
Unbelievable.
No. But I mean, you know, I think that really struck home how close it was to Formula One, was that, you know, I think Yuki lives in Faenza,
doesn't he?
So he lives in that town. So I did see a lot of people saying, oh, I didn't see any of the other drivers there. It's like, well, you know, not to take anything away from Yuki, but like, that's literally where he lives. That's down, you know, it's outside of his house. And yeah, it just shows you how close to home it was for, you know, one of the 10 teams.
Yeah. And for like De Vries, I saw some people being like, you know, oh, De Vries just went home. It's like, well, he couldn't actually get to Faenza. That was part of his problem. He did that post, didn't he, on Instagram where he got stuck. And had to spend the night in a village that was helped, or, you know, one of the McLaren guys helped him out and gave up a room. So obviously McLaren mechanics were happy to share or something, and they had a spare room that De Vries could have. Like, really good of them. But I'm sure if he then could have got to Faenza and was needed to help, he would have. But when they're just basically saying, don't travel, go home or get out, like, to somewhere that you're away from all the kind of pressure of it all, he's still doing the right thing. So but yeah, good on Yuki getting his hands dirty on that. And it's a lot of cleanup. I've seen some of the pictures from the paddock as well, with the amount of mud that's been brought in by the flooding. And like, I think the TV compound needs a pretty solid wash down and see which bits of electrical kit have survived and which ones haven't. So it'll be interesting to see if there's any knock-on effect actually in terms of like extra work people have to do in Monaco. But we'll still get a race on. Nothing seems to be...
Yeah, defo.
Nothing's... what's the right term, critical to the race that's been damaged. But yeah, I'm sure it's still going to be a headache for a lot of people. Not for us, me and them.
Yeah, I feel a little bit bad. Yeah. It just kind of, for us, it feels like business as normal.
Well, yeah. I think the teams have two sets of motorhomes. So I think the motorhomes have already been set up in Monaco, and the ones that we're using Imola will just go straight to Spain. So things like that, they've got enough flex in their logistics to mean that things like that can crack on, really, for Monaco. I guess the challenge is just making sure they've got enough time to get to Spain.
Yeah. Well, so what are you doing with your newfound freedom, Mr. Barreto, this weekend?
It's mostly spent wedding planning. So, and also the weather's really good in the UK at the minute. So it's spending more time in the garden, which is nice. This is going to sound like all more old person chat, but like my garden's looking lush. All the plants that we planted last year.
Oh my word.
Smashed out the park.
I think I prefer golf chat. Yeah, that was pretty wedding garden. I mean, geez, we're definitely not young men anymore.
What about you, Nate?
Well, you can tell I'm the only one of the three of us who isn't getting married this year because I've got no wedding planning to do. I went to Henley yesterday, which is just up the road from where I live, and went to some bars there, some pubs, just walked down the river. Some of my friends have just moved up there. And today I'm going to a brewery near me. So, you know, my weekend is focused around beer and yours is focused around your wedding. I think Meadows is kind of wedding planning as well.
Yeah, we've got some more to do today. Did a bit yesterday. We're moving house, so house move stuff.
I'm excited about. Very excited. Coming my neck of the woods.
Yeah, closer to these boys. So the Padhock.
Padhockshire, we'll call it.
So yeah, all that sort. In that sense, I mean, this really is. I don't know what the right term is for this, but this is where people can come at me for saying it, but. The unexpected free weekend and the fact that it hasn't been busy with other stuff means just being able to take advantage of time that I didn't think I'd get to sort some of this stuff. So I've been plowing through it. So it's actually been really like boring, not doing a lot of exciting things, sitting at the laptop still kind of doing admin, but I'm so thankful for it. Obviously would rather have been working on the race and had a race to watch, but been productive in the gap. But I think it has kind of surprised me how, like we said earlier, just how quiet it kind of meant it's gone.
I think, so I spoke to some PR people. I think that's been by design as well. A lot of them are like, right, we're not going to get a week off properly again for a while. Obviously, there will be weekends off, but like a weekend like this is kind of like, you know, gold dust in the calendar. So they're all just like, unless there's something absolutely urgent, we're not sending anything out to the media. We don't need to put on press sessions. Because remember in COVID, you'd occasionally get like, oh, we're going to put a Zoom on because you haven't spoken to anyone for a while. We didn't have any of that. Mm. It's not really needed. Like, we'll speak to them in, you know, less than a week on Thursday in Monaco. Mm. So
I also think it's a little bit disrespectful, isn't it, of what's going on in Imola. I don't think you want to be going, there's another race coming like next weekend before this kind of weekend's kind of almost out. So,
I guess the silence kind of almost makes a bigger point of the lack of racing, doesn't it? Or the lack of an event. So, although there is racing going on. Well, not racing, but qualifying at Indy.
Yeah, I watched some of that last night. It's actually pretty entertaining with the fast lane and the slow lane. Mm. I didn't quite appreciate. So, sorry if I'm preaching. Well, I'm definitely preaching to the choir with Medland. I don't know if Barreto knows this.
You can explain to me.
I think it's a really cool idea, and I'd love to see if Formula One can implement it in some way. So you have a fast lane and a slow lane. Lane one, lane two, and qualifying. So you queue up. Most people queue up in the slow lane, lane two. And basically, when it gets to you, you go out and you do your four-lap run. And if that's quicker than the last run, then that becomes your new time. If it's slower, then your last time remains. But if you go in the fast lane, you not only jump everyone in the slow lane, but you basically erase your last time. So Newgarden yesterday was like 25th, I think. 20th, something like that. He went to the fast lane. He erased his time, so when he went out on the track, it's like if he messes this up, he won't be in the Indy 500. He won't set a time. So he has to. So they, regardless of if that time's quicker or slower, that is your new time that gets taken. So it adds that bit of jeopardy to it. And obviously, in the Indy 500, not everyone qualifies for the race, which adds an extra element to it. My friend Rachel's there because her brother Ben works on Lil Dave's car, Dave Malukas, and he was. In the danger zone yesterday, then had a mega run. I think it was the penultimate runner at the end. But it's really fun watching. I mean, even though you're just kind of watching them because it's average speed, it's not time, it's still, I think they've done a good job of making it. It's quite interesting to watch it because they have that jeopardy and there's, you know, it's kind of one shot shot qualifying style whereby it's not one shot because you do four laps, but if you mess that lap up, you go to the back of the queue again. You know, it's not like you can go straight back out again. So it was pretty interesting. It's crazy how, I mean, because they're qualifying again today, aren't they? They have the shootout to, there's four of them and only one can go through. Is that right, Medders?
No, so...
last row only, shootout, whatever
there's
it is.
Only 33 spots in the field for the Indy 500, but you can have more entries. And there were 34 entries. So the bottom four have to run again today with the slowest one not making the race.
Yes.
Getting bumped. But then,
that's it, which is what happened to Alonso, isn't it?
Yes, but that's when they had 36 entries, so he was one of three that didn't make it.
Right.
They had six run that day where three went through, three didn't. But you're right, yeah, they set the back row and drop off who else is not, who doesn't get in. But also then the top 12 will run again.
That's the fast 12, isn't it? So that's sixth pole.
And then, well, then they go into the fast six, so the fastest six will then run again to set pole. And in the top 12, quite good for McLaren. Got to be said.
McLaren looked really good.
Yeah.
I feel like, given how McLaren have not been doing very well in Formula One, be very big for that team if they won next week.
Yeah, they were fastest two cars with Rosenqvist and Rossi. And they had all four of their drivers in the top eight, which is pretty damn impressive.
Wow.
That is. I'd love Rosenqvist to win. I really would. He's mega. I mean, I'd love any of the McLaren guys to win. To be honest with you, there's not many people in IndyCar I don't really like. Like, you look at the driver field, you know, it seems like a good bunch. Also, shout out as well, because I'm super impressed, to a fellow Brit, Catherine Legg, qualified yesterday. And she hasn't done the race for 10 years. She's 41, which is, you know, which is older than even Alonso, right?
Alonso's now 41.
He's now 41. So, yeah, she hasn't done the race for 10 years and qualified ahead of, she's in the Letterman team, isn't she? Ahead of all three of her full-time Letterman teammates, which I thought was super impressive. Deserves a shout-out.
She also set the fastest qualifying lap by a female driver ever at 231.596 miles an hour and the fastest average speed across the four laps of 231.070 of any female driver ever.
So fast. I mean, so I've told this story before, maybe, that, you know, I went to the Indy 500, I don't know if, you know, you guys know that. But in 2017, for the start, it's one of the coolest experiences ever. I sat in the Scott Dixon pit box with Chip Ganassi. McLaren was so busy with media requests, and they had a bunch of the Spanish journalists sitting with them for the start of the race, because obviously Alonso was doing it. But our friend Stuart Morrison at Haas set me up with some of his friends at Chip Ganassi. So I sat in the pit box for the start. Anyone who's seen the Indy 500, they do like five formation laps as they build the speed up behind the pace car. And they came past like the first or second time. I was like, wow, they're going so fast. And I'm so sorry to the Chip Ganassi team. I've forgotten the guy I sat with, who was lovely, absolutely lovely. He was the crew chief there. I had the headsets on. I turned to him and I was like, they're so fast. He's like, well, wait, that's half speed. Like, they've got three more laps. And when they all come past you on the first lap at speed, like they've just been released by the pace car, honestly, you just get hit by like wind and dust. It was unbelievable. I've never seen anything as fast as that. And then obviously they spread out more as it goes along, but just getting quicker and quicker. It was mega. And yeah, I can't wait to, I mean, we'll be in Monaco, but I imagine McLaren will do something pretty cool when we're there.
Yeah, hint, McLaren, obviously you're listening as a whole team. do something cool when we're there.
So I've been told that McLaren will listen live to these. They'll all come into the office and they'll be like, right, we're not doing any work on the car for the next hour because we have to listen to the Paddock lads talk Formula One to us. The Paddockers. What would a Paddock, what's the plural of Paddock? Paddocks? I guess it's just Paddocks, isn't it? Pad high.
Isn't that that's a dinner dish, mate.
Yeah, that does sound like pad high. A dish, doesn't it? But we are all a dish.
So, wow.
Pad highs.
Right, let's take it forward, shall we, to Monaco and move
on? Yeah, Lawrence is saying, let's stop Nate from talking for a little bit. And,
he's also like, it's not stories of following IndyCar around the world, so he's like, let's get to F1 again.
So I know Medlin's going. Are you going, Nate, to Monaco?
I am, yeah. I am. Flying on Wednesday.
The Paddock Trio will be there.
They will indeed. We'll have to get a picture on the grid. We haven't really done that yet, have we?
No,
probably.
No, because Medders is normally really busy.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, I'll tell you what. We'll get a picture of Medders and we'll stand behind him.
Yeah.
And we'll just get a candid one like that.
You just set it up and just tell me, like, just wave frantically and I'll walk by at the right time.
A wave at the right time. Yeah.
Like but we love Monaco, don't we? I'm a big fan of... I mean, going to it. I know the race isn't great, but going to it is pretty special. My third Monaco.
Qualifying is great.
Qualifying is great. Qualifying, I think it's weird, isn't it? Because qualifying is probably better than the race.
Yeah.
And that Saturday, you feel like the winner is decided that day almost. It's not always the case, but
no, it's definitely not the case when it's Charles Leclerc on pole.
No.
Oh, poor Charles.
Yeah, I'd like to see him win it. Well, this weekend could be the weekend that somebody beats Red Bull, because as aptly pointed out by Mark Hughes in a much more technical fashion than I'm going to say, but Red Bull's advantage is not in low-speed corners compared to the likes of Aston Martin and Ferrari. And they also don't turn their tyres on quite as quickly, which is why they look after them better in a race and are quicker in a race. So if there's going to be a circuit where maybe Alonso or maybe Leclerc could beat them again, I mean, Leclerc already out-qualified them in Baku. Then
if Alonso wins, can you imagine? That'd be so good.
Yeah.
One of my fears this year, because I think Alonso's going to win a race with Aston, isn't it?
Hang
at some
on, are
point.
You fearing that Alonso is going to win a race?
No. The opposite. I'm worried I'm going to miss it. I'm worried it's going to be a race I'm not at. Like, I'd love to be there for that, you know? I just really hope
You just don't think it's going to be Monaco then?
No, I think it will. But if it's not then, I just don't know where it would be.
I think it is going to be Monaco if he's going to win one this year.
Yeah.
I think he's definitely. So I'm right now happy to say I'm certain he's going to win one this year. I just can't. Like, Red Bull have been great, but it's such a long season and you get so many things thrown at you. It's so. Like, no one's ever done that before for a reason. It's so hard. And we've added more races to make it even harder for someone to do it.
Yeah. Can we just mark a moment in time where we have to play this section of chatting after Abu Dhabi?
Yeah.
Sure. When Red Bull have won every single race this year.
Not going to happen.
Yeah. They finish 1-2 at every race as well, just to make it even worse. No, I think Meadows is right. I mean, even that Mercedes team in 2014, 2016, you know, they didn't win everything. You're going to have issues for one car or both cars. And also, you're just going to make mistakes at some point, even Red Bull. Mm-hmm.
Or get caught up in someone else's mistake. Like, you know, it could be as silly as in Monaco, a misunderstanding with a backmarker or something, or, an error in the pit stop, or, loads of things can go wrong. One poor start. And that's it. Even if they put it on pole, one poor start and you're screwed. So I just absolutely cannot see them winning all of them. I'm more than happy to keep reiterating it, because if it did happen, it would be insane. Like, the fact that it's never happened before, there's a reason it's that unlikely and that difficult to do. So I'm all aboard the Alonso's going to win a race hype train. And it would be good to do it this weekend coming, so that that still adds a little bit of intrigue in the championship, and he'd be going to his home Grand Prix having won a race.
That would be cool. I mean, I'm not going to Spain, but him winning in Spain would be. I mean, it's very unlikely that if you look at that circuit. Like, but I mean, can you imagine? Because his last win was Valencia. Spain. So
no, it was Barcelona 2013.
Of course it was. Yeah, sorry, it was that one.
So it's 10 years ago.
So yeah, I was thinking. I was like, no, Maldonado bit, but that was 2012, wasn't it, in Spain?
Yeah.
Geez, 10 years since he's won a race. That is nuts.
Well, and really interesting stat here from Formula One's Instagram account, who make the point that this is Alonso's best start to a season across the first 5 rounds since we went to this points system. I believe it's this point system. It's since 2010 is what they've put down. Mm. And I don't know if that's just because it only fits. When did we go to this point system? Why have I got such a terrible memory?
It was 2010.
It was 2010. Yeah.
Because Button won it when it was 10, 8, 6 for the top three.
So yeah, so most he's ever had. So even in his Ferrari years, so in 2010 when he had a really good start to that and was in the title fight, he had 67 points. 2012 when he took it to the wire, he had 61 points. 2013... with that win in Spain, he had 72 points. And obviously that season, like, absolutely fell away from them. This year, he's got 75 points from the first 5 rounds.
That's a great start.
Yeah. And it's mad because after that run, in 2018 with McLaren, he got 32 points in the first 5 rounds. But in 2015, he got no points in the first 5 rounds. 2016, he got 8. 2017, he got no points again, then with McLaren. And then in his 2 years with Alpine, 2021... 5 points from the first 5 rounds. 2022, 2 points from the first 5 rounds.
Damn.
So it's a heck of a stat that this is best start under this point system. But it's just a shame that Red Bull are going to win every race.
See, look, Meadows is just covering his back now. So he can, if we do play that audio at the end of the season, he's like, well, here's me saying it later that episode.
Oh, don't worry. I'm just going to do my own, set up my own podcast. As in, you know, just it'll be a one-man recording. And I'll be like, well, I personally, I think that this is what's going to happen.
We should just do, end of the year, just do a cold text episode. Just us, just clips of us just getting things
wrong.
Yeah, awfully wrong. Just
there'll
awful.
Be I mean, of that,
yeah, there'll be loads.
Yeah, I don't know if I've got the time to go and find them all. There's so many.
So if there's any producers out there who want to make us look silly.
Or listeners who've made notes have gone, because there was someone, I can't remember, like off the top of my head, the name, who did send in, didn't they, the joke scoring and like the way it had been going, and they tracked each joke every episode.
The graph.
Yeah, which is incredible. So someone might have done that with all the things we've got wrong. But again, it's just if they've got the time, which it needs to be a lot of time. A lot of time.
It does. It does indeed. It's like, yeah, I feel like I really respect that, because we don't even take the time to do some of the stuff that our listeners do. So, but speaking of listeners, don't we have a very random Twitter question?
Yeah, we do.
To come to.
Yeah, which might be the last thing we do, both for it being weird and
what,
the fact
forever?
That I think Nate needed to go places, didn't he?
That sounded very, that sounded very.
But it was from F1 Unspo on Twitter, asked if we can help. And said, love the pod, by the way, which is why flattery will get you everywhere. That's why we're reading it out. But it's a screenshot of a WhatsApp chat they're having with someone. And whoever it is has messaged him saying, stoned thought of the day. So
nice.
Off to a strong start. Is AI racing to motorsport what motorsport was to horse racing? And then...
I like that. That's because you can imagine a few people a bit high having that discussion. You know what I mean? That is very much... I don't smoke weed anymore, but when I was younger, I did. You know, when I was like 22, and you have conversations like that all the time. Not endorsing it, or you know, just do whatever you want to do, basically.
That's legal in a bunch of states in the US, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So I don't know, because did motor racing didn't kill horse racing. Horse racing is still very popular. So I don't know whether.
Yeah, but sim racing hasn't killed motor racing either. That's
no. So that's what I mean. So I don't know whether they're. Because it hasn't, I don't think motor racing's affected horse racing. You know what I mean? Horse racing stayed very, very similar. And even motor cars, like cars generally didn't kill horse racing. So I don't know. It's not going to change anything, I don't think. Maybe that's what they
but
mean.
It doesn't, no, yeah, it doesn't say it if influence does it. It just says, is sim racing to motorsport what motorsport was to horse racing? So kind of like just taking what was, I guess. Man and animal became man and machine, becomes almost machine and machine. So I guess in that sense, yeah, if it's like one step removed from human and animal, it became human and machine, and now it's just machine and machine if you look at it as AI racing.
Yeah. It's definitely more fun for a younger generation, like people who sit and watch other people stream a race on Twitch or something, which I still find baffling, but each to their own.
Wow, this is the old man's pod, isn't it? It's like, yes, really, young
honestly.
People do this.
Honestly, next week, the joke's going to be knock knock. Who's there? A Gen Z person. A Gen Z person who? And I'll be like, boo, and that'll be the joke.
I'll give you about a 9 for that.
Lawrence will be like, we've done it. Nate's done the best joke we're ever going to hear. The pod's done. Any young listeners, we don't hate you. We love you.
Exactly.
We just have to make that clear. We are just very grumpy British men who are, grumpy, basically.
Yeah, as much as we're in kind of making the most of an unexpected weekend off, we're missing racing. So it's coming out in our grumpy.
Coming out in a brutal and ageist form. Yeah. And we're sorry for that.
Well, don't worry. We've got racing coming up. Very, very soon, chaps, which means I get to see you guys very, very soon. So let's just call it there so we don't run out of things to say to each other when we next see each other.
Yeah, because that happens. We quite often just stand around mute, kicking the floor when we meet each other.
We'll
at
shake
paddocks.
Hands and then we're like, yep, just nodding at each other.
Just
yep.
like, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, good. To, yeah, so nice. Should do this again.
Mm.
So
right, I'm going to stop.
Ferrari.
Stop.
So Meadows getting married soon. In this, both of you getting married.
Meadows, can you like fade Nate down? Can you
gardening?
I mean, I feel like he should do that every episode anyway. I don't know why you guys let me just come on here and talk.
That tells you that I can't. That's why it hasn't happened.
Yeah, we can't do it.
Well, when we do these in person, he could, because he has that little box thing, doesn't he? You know, the little device. The device.
It's huge, that unit.
That unit. Yeah, sorry, unit's better. But he can physically lower me on that. So a good incentive for us to do
okay,
more
well,
episodes in person.
Well, let's anyway, do more in person based on that.
Lawrence, I am now going to stop talking. I'm going to let you talk for the final bit of the show where you talk and then we finish after you've talked.
Well,
go.
I feel like you've done a lot of talking, so I'll keep this bit short and sweet. Thanks, chaps, as ever. We'll definitely do this again. You can read Nate's work on ESPN.com, Menace's work on Racer.com, and my work on F1.com, and you can follow us on @ThePadHug across social media.
See you guys. Bye-bye.
Bye then.
Bye. Yeah.